Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the locking over the main name subject to UDRP proceedings PDP working group call on Thursday, 29th of November. On the call today we have Laurie Anderson, Christine Derain, Lisa Garono, Alan Greenberg, Volker Grainman, Celia Lerman, Michael Nealon, Juan Manuel Rojas, Matt Schneller, Faisal Shah, and we also have David Roach-Turner. We have apologies from David Mayer and Gabriella Slack. From staff, we have Marika Connings, Barry Cobb, and myself, Julia Charbolin. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon, everybody, or good morning, or I don't know what other time zones people are in, so let's just work on afternoons and mornings. The meeting today, we're going to try and kill off the last couple of public comments. There's only one or two left. And then after that, we're going to move on, hopefully, to having a look at the straw man proposal that Marika has circulated. And, of course, before I forget, because I'm likely to, does anybody have any updates to their statement of interest or expressions of interest or whatever that thing is called? Sorry, acronym's not working too well. Going once, going twice. No? Fine. Okay. Right then. Marika, thanks, you updated this. Everybody can scroll this, I assume. So, which number did we have? Did we have the first one? 36 is the first missing one. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So 36 is the first one, and I'm just zooming in there a bit so I can read the damn thing. IHG, who's that?
Doesn't work. I think it's an international hotel group or something like that.
Okay.
I'm not sure if the acronym, I have the acronym right, but I think it's a group that is representing different hotel chains, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. New one for me. Right, their comment, it's highly important that the UDRP system require that upon filing of a UDRP complaint, the registrar must proceed to immediately lock down the domains in question, preventing any change to the domains until the UDRP proceeding has been completed. This locking should occur whenever a registrar is first notified that a complaint has been filed, whether by a complainant, a UDRP service provider, or otherwise. And I think our comment would be, thanks for the comment, this is what we are looking at. I mean, it's very similar to some of the other ones we've already had. Any other comments on that? Oh, Intercontinental Hotel Groups. Is that that's the corporate entity that owns the Intercontinental Hotels? Is that right, Marika?
Yes, that's correct. I see on the website, like Intercontinental, Crown Plaza, Holiday Inn, etc.
Okay, cool. I think I'm a member of their frequent stay scheme. Anyway, anybody have any other comments on 36?
Michaela, it's Alan. I'm not on my computer right now.
Okay.
Did that say that they're saying registrars should lock it as soon as they get notification from anyone?
Yes.
That is not what we're working on, I thought.
What we were working on was deciding whether this was true or not.
Yeah, but I thought we had pretty well decided that we can't put upon registrars the requirement to check whether it's reasonable enough to do it, and that we were simply, I thought we were talking about not letting the registrant know until the provider had a chance to tell the registrar.
Okay.
What they're suggesting is not quite what we're looking at. The net effect may be the same, but it's not the same. But it's a different order, I think.
No, you're right. I don't disagree. Sorry, and thank you for helping to wake me up, even though it is 3 o'clock in the afternoon Irish time. I'm having my post lunch slump. Okay. Based on what Alan says, then. We do not agree with this. We want to follow the process that we have been working on. Okay, number 37.
We understand the intent and plan to cover it. Yeah.
Oh yeah, totally.
Okay.
No, I don't disagree. My God, Alan, you and I actually agree on things. Please don't tell anybody. INTA, a lock should be implemented upon the registrar's receipt of a complaint rather than upon notification of commencement of the proceeding from the UDRP dispute resolution service provider. And our comment then would be that we don't agree with this. Is that correct?
I wouldn't
Sorry,
disagree Bailey, with that.
You cut out for a second. Our response would be?
We don't agree with this or we do agree with this?
The same response as the previous one.
Okay. David, I think you wanted to say something or heard a voice. No?
Okay. Oh, thanks, Michaela. Yeah, I just wanted to mention that I think there are three timeframes that we've been looking at as possible options. The first is on the first filing of the complaint with the provider. The second is on the registrar's receipt of notification from the provider in the form of a registrar verification request. And the third option is on the formal commencement of the UDRP proceedings, which is what happens when the respondent's formally notified of the complaint. I don't have a comment on the merit of comments number 37 and 38, but I read both of these comments as being supportive of the introduction of a lock as from the first filing of the complaint with the UDRP provider.
Okay. Let's have a quick look at 38 because I think it's probably going to be linked. 38, the maximum amount of time that a registrar has to lock a domain after receipt of a complaint should be standardized and must not exceed 24 hours after receipt of notice with assurances. Such notice with assurances would consist of the receipt of complaint where the complainant, pursuant to the requirements of a UDRP action, sends a single email address to the registrant's email address as listed in Who Is at the time of filing the complaint, the provider's UDRP-related email address, and the registrar's email address as provided at the Internet Registrar List or as clearly and promptly identified on the registrar's website. I actually see a huge problem with that already, but anyway, okay. Attaches a copy of the complaint. Oh, my God. Attaches a copy of the complaint in any annexes as an attachment or attachments, each in either Word or PDF formats to the single email. Attaches some proof of payment of the provider's UDRP fees to the single email, provided, however, the financial data, like credit card numbers, may be obscured. This requirement should be deemed met if the complaint is attached to a filing receipt from the provider's online filing system. Such a single communication to the registrant, provider and registrar and the inclusion of the complaint, any annexes and proof of payment, notice with assurances, provides the registrar with reasonable assurances that a legitimate complaint has been filed without burdening the registrar with further authentication determinations. Implementation of a domain lock upon receipt of a complaint would be required, but only if the complainant meets the notice with assurances requirements in order to minimize the risk of fake complaints. And Marika informs us that Luke has joined the call. I'm going to put myself in the queue, has anybody else got any comments on this? Anybody got any other comments on this?
It's Alan, I may, but I'll let you speak first.
Okay. Michaeli speaking as a registrar, not as the chair. I absolutely hate this for one very simple reason, that as a registrar, there's several email addresses published on our website, and there is absolutely no way on earth that I would want those email addresses to be used for anything anywhere close to being this important with a contractual obligation tied to them, nor would I want them to be in receipt of potentially hundreds of megabytes of attachments. There is absolutely zero way of knowing that the email sent to an address, an email address published on a registrar's website, is going to be routed to anybody who will either understand what they're receiving or be in a position to act on it. So for those reasons, while I appreciate what INTA is trying to do, and the concept of their assurances thing may have some merit. The operational aspects of this are completely unacceptable from a registrar perspective. Thanks. Go ahead, David, and then Alan.
Thanks, Michaeli. I just have one observation, which is that the process which is described in this comment is, of course, essentially what a provider does when it initially receives a complaint as a prelude to sending to the registrar the request to lock the domain name. So I suppose in theory it would certainly be, from our perspective, fine if the registrar would want to take on that role in this respect. But there may be some element of duplication that may result from it. So in that sense, if this would be a recommendation that the group would consider adopting, I think it makes sense to make it a recommendation that is quite specific and quite precise, and makes it easy for the registrar to understand what is being asked of it if this is the direction in which the group would go.
Okay, thanks, David. Alan?
Speaking not as a registrar, I think this is ridiculous. I think it places an unreasonable burden on a registrar, and which most registrars are not capable of necessarily doing with the level of confidence that the providers can, and the 24 calendar, you know, clock hours is an unreasonable burden. And I believe what we're talking about now of changing the sequence of notifications provides the exact same level of confidence, or perhaps even more, since the respondent is not notified at all yet, without adding that level of complexity and burden. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Damn, I've lost my window. Oh, sorry. Laurie Anderson's just put into the chat, of all the complaints we received in the last 6 years, we've had one complaint that was fake. We will lock, she means GoDaddy, will lock based on a complaint filed with the provider that we are copied on. We do not wait for the verification or commencement. Does anybody else have any other comments on this? Okay, so what is our response for this? I mean, we've got several responses. My view on this is pretty clear. David has explained certain things, and Alan has expressed his. How would people want the working group to respond to this comment, to number 38? Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, I think the response is we understand the intent and hope to be able to address it. Our methodology may be different, and I agree with Christine that a registrar should be allowed to do it, but it should not be required to do it.
Okay. Christine, go ahead.
Yep, that was all I was going to say. Thank you.
Okay. All right, thank you. Just there's also a bit of a discussion here in the chat, which I'm going to kind of read into the record. David is asking Laurie how long it takes them to implement a lock. Laurie was saying about 24 hours, that within 24 hours, and Luke points out that not all registrars are equipped to do so. Laurie now has gone from her 24 hours saying that's usually within 12. So I think Luke's point is that not all registrars would be able to do so, would still stand. Okay, so 37, we've got, Celia. Please, Celia, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Celia. Just one question in response to Luke's comment. Registrars are not equipped to respond within any 24-hour period, or is it just under these circumstances?
Luke, do you want to answer that, or do you want me to mind read?
Oh, sorry, I did not got the last part. But my understanding of the comment is that our legal team would have to review the documents to be sure that we have the necessary assurance that the complaint is not fake and is valid and blah, blah, blah. So for me, no, we are not equipped to do that within 24 hours.
Right, but under other circumstances, any registrar could potentially, let's say it was, you know, under, like in the strawman model we propose, there are, you know, it's a common standard for what you require is low, like if the provider notifies you instead of the complainant, any registrar could do it within 24 hours.
Any registrar could do what within 24 hours?
Log the domain.
Okay, I think just trying to.
Period.
Okay, the problem for something like this is that within 24 hours means you're talking about holidays, bank holidays, weekends, etc., etc. If you were to say within one working day, you would get a different response from Luke and from some of the other registrars. Now, in the case of, I don't want to put words into people's mouths, but I imagine for GoDaddy, 24 hours may not be as big an issue as it would be for other registrars. Volker has his hand up. Please, go ahead.
Yeah, I agree completely with what Michaela is saying. Many of the smaller registrars have one person dealing with all that and somebody taking care of the rest. 24 hours is just too... undefined time space for actual work to be done. If we get it at on Friday at 3 o'clock and there's a lot in the ticket queue, it might not be taken care of till Monday, and I think that's reasonable.
Perfect.
Okay. Do you want? Is that okay? Does that help, Celia?
Yeah, very helpful. And I ask this especially thinking about the Strawman model that we're going to propose later. So thank you.
Okay, well, I mean, the thing with the straw man is it's something that, you know, it's to be ripped apart.
Mm-hmm.
So people are meant to poke holes in it and find issues with it. You know, that's the idea behind it. So obviously some parts of it will be acceptable, other parts may not be.
Yeah, great.
Okay?
Great.
All right, then. I don't know what... Oh, sorry, somebody's trying to ring my extensions. So I'm just going to ignore that beeping in my ear. Okay, so several people are saying on the chat that the one business day concept works a lot better for them, including both David and Christine. Now, 39. Comment from GoDaddy. We believe domain names should be locked upon reasonable notification of a dispute to prevent cyberflies, aka registrar hopping, as well as to minimize the cost of tracking down or retrieving a disputed names. Anybody have anything to add to that or anything, any reaction to that? Going once, going twice.
Agreed.
Okay, agreed. Thank you. Fine. Right, moving on. Okay, hold on a second. I have to do lots of scrolling here. Scroll, 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 scroll. My mouse is getting tired. And where the hell are we going to? Scroll, 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 scroll. Bear me 1 second. There's a couple of comments at the very end. Okay, 81. Should unlocking during the UDRP proceeding be accepted under certain circumstances? FICPI points out the importance of the possibility to temporarily or for limited purposes unlock a disputed domain name during the UDR proceeding, namely in the case where the parties agree to a transfer. Does anybody have any comments on that?
It's Alan. I thought that for at least one of the providers, I don't remember which, that they handle that by the parties coming back to the dispute provider and the dispute provider rules that a transfer has been agreed to and therefore requests the transfer or orders the transfer. I'm not sure if that's something that will be acceptable to all providers, but it certainly addresses the issue without us trying to craft words which tell a registrar under what conditions to believe the parties that, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yep. Okay. Now, I've got a massive queue that suddenly appeared from nowhere. So going in order of how we're going to deal with them, we have Marika, Volker, Christine, and then Laurie. Marika, you have the floor,
yes,
or the phone.
This is Marika. Maybe just to remind people, because I think this is a discussion we had a couple of ICANN meetings ago, where I think the group asked a question whether you know, the fact that we have to deal with locking, does it also mean that we can make recommendations on unlocking? And I think the council responded that, yes, we understand that if you lock something, you should also be able to make recommendations to unlock. So just to note that I think this is something that is within the remit of the working group to consider and make recommendations on should you decide so.
Okay, thank you. Volker, Christine, then Laurie.
Yes, just in response to the previous point, we haven't seen that yet where the a case yet where the provider makes that decision. We've seen a lot of cases with WIPO where the case is suspended. And then we require, as a registrar, to both parties to come to us and mutually agree to a transfer, and we will then process that transfer. Because as the proceedings are suspended at that time, i.e. not running, we believe and have received confirmation from WIPO that an unlocking and a transfer at that point can be performed as long as certain provisions are made, which is that the transfer from the respondent to the complainant takes place. And we broker that as a registrar.
Just for clarification, Volker, you're saying then that assuming that the dispute provider suspends the dispute, is that it, then you would work with the two parties for the transfer, is that correct?
That's correct. Most of the case is that the respondent answers that he wants to transfer but can't. We point him to the to contact the complainant and WIPO, and WIPO then informs the complainant that there has been a communication from the respondent that a transfer is intended. The complainant then has to request a suspension, which we then receive a confirmation of from the provider. Once we receive that that suspension notice, we inform both the respondent and the complainant about the conditions under which the domain name can be unlocked and transferred. We do not allow the respondent to transfer the domain. We do that for him. And once the domain is transferred, the complainant is usually the party that instructs the provider that the proceedings can be finally terminated. Or, if I remember correctly, the proceedings are automatically terminated if no further communication is received. Otherwise, the complainant has to put in that there is suspension be removed and the proceedings be continued.
Okay, thank you. Christine and then Laurie.
I just wanted to mention, this is Christine, that the reason that this is even an issue is not because of the registrars that understand how to allow a suspension to allow the parties to settle. It's for the registrars, again, you know, there's a group of registrars that know what they're doing. They know how to lock and unlock a domain name and when to do so. They know when there's a suspension. They know when there's a stay. They know when the parties are trying to negotiate a settlement, and they know how to broker that settlement, as Volker said, to make sure that only the right party gets the transfer. The problem is, the reason I think we're all here is for the registrars that don't know. And, you know, Volker mentioned, yes, we've learned from WIPO that this is acceptable. It's the same thing. I don't know, you know, what David can say about it, but I can tell you that not a small portion of my, you know, month is spent helping registrars figure out, oh, this is what a suspension means. Yes, you can unlock to allow the parties to transfer between themselves. And so I think for what I'm thinking is the purpose of maybe part of this is to say, you know, here's how the provider's supplemental rules work, because I think WIPOs and ours work the same. So really it's a matter of making sure that the registrars that don't already know what they're doing, you know, have the tools in place to know what it is they're supposed to do or what it is they're allowed to do if the parties want to settle. And I guess that's the point I thought I would make there, because you know, there are registrars clearly like Volker and GoDaddy and others who know exactly what they're doing in this situation.
Okay, thank you. Laurie.
We used to unlock the domains years ago and let the parties handle it between themselves, but we ran into issues with the respondent not following through. So now we handle it. So, but we would never unlock the domain and let the parties sort of sort it out between themselves until we don't unlock it completely and give the winner of the dispute control of it until we have a final decision. So even after there's a suspension and we have agreement on both sides, so we move the domain name to the complaining party, and then we don't unlock until we have a termination in the case.
Okay. Thank you. So, what do we put in as the response then? We put in there is already best practice, this is already possible under the current UDRP, and we will make a note of this in our report or something like this.
Yeah, Michele, this is Christine. Yeah, I think maybe mentioning that the providers have mechanisms in place in their supplemental rules, but that we're considering maybe adding a best practice.
Okay.
If everyone agrees that we would consider adding a best practice.
I'm seeing various comments which are kind of supportive of that concept in the chat. Alan has his hand up again. Laurie, I'm assuming that's an old hand and I'm ignoring it. Alan, go ahead.
No, I don't think we can say providers have a methodology in their roots because, you know, a new supplier could come along that doesn't. You know, we could say suppliers must have or should have or something like that. We can't just presume it's there.
That's a fair point.
Just a caution on wording.
That's a fair point. That's a very fair point. So maybe we should, let's try to say then maybe the existing providers, WIPO and NAFT, I was getting it wrong. Sorry, Christine, no offense. Have procedures in place to handle this, and the working group would urge any new providers to do likewise, and this concept of best practice or something, I don't know. If anybody has any other suggestions on that, please share them. Sorry, Marika. You weren't waving at me. Of course, you can't wave on Adobe, so.
Yeah, this is Marika. I think one suggestion, and I think that probably will come more into play as well when we look at the straw man, because I think eventually the idea will be, you know, to have a kind of step-by-step process which registrars need to follow, and presumably this will be one of the elements that could be built in here, in there, basically with a reference saying, look, this is already, an option currently under the rules, so this is what happens or what you need to do or can consider to do, depending on, you know, where it fits, but I think in the end that would hopefully be one of the outcomes where there's indeed a clear step-by-step process that clarifies what happens in the different steps of a UDRP proceeding.
Okay. Thank you, Marika. Moving on to 82, again from the Intercontinental Hotel Group. Because of the delay between the date on which a UDRP is filed and the date on which the service provider commences the proceeding, a domain name can be transferred before the proceeding truly begins in earnest, a threat that IHG encounters in every UDRP complaint it files. I'm tempted to just say noted, because they're just saying, they're not specifying in my, unless I'm misreading this, they're not specifying anything that is kind of actionable for us.
Well, it will be actionable if we end up making a recommendation that the complainant no longer has to notify the respondent.
Okay.
And that notification comes later in the process, we will be addressing it. So noted is fine, I think.
Okay. Volker has his hand up. Go ahead, Volker.
I might have the terms backwards, but the commencement of the proceedings is after the domain has been already confirmed as locked, correct? So actually, I don't think the comment is entirely correct because the domain name is locked before the commencement, because the commencement only occurs when WIPO has the data from the registrar who has confirmed that the domain is locked already.
Okay, and David is saying that it's the gap between the date in which the complaint is filed and confirmed is locked that matters, not commencement, and he's agreeing with Volker. Okay, so, and Christine agrees with David, which means she also agrees with Volker. Okay, so, yeah, I think we've covered that. We've kind of, we're noting it, we're dealing with it, it's being dealt with, and also there's a bit of confusion, possibly, with respect to timing in that comment. 83, again from INTA. Problems with current lock processes. Registrars that lock only upon receipt of a notice of commencement from the UDP. Bloody hell. Sorry. Upon receipt of a notice of commencement from the UDRP service provider, rather than on receipt of the file complaint from the complainant, leave a considerable window of time between the time when the registrant is notified of the complaint and the time the registrar applies the lock. A number of problems arise if pre-commencement changes to registrant data occur. The portions of the complaint that refer to the registrant and his activities may no longer be accurate, and the complaint may need to be revised at the expense of the complainant. A change of registrant information may impact the ability of the complainant to group multiple domain names in a single UDRP proceeding, or cause the complainant to incur additional costs to prepare and submit arguments, and fees were applicable under provider supplemental rules to argue that the domain names in fact share a common owner. A change of registrar may impact jurisdiction for appeals. A change of registrant may impact complainant's ability to prove bad faith registration and use, e.g. through ownership of other domain names or through prior UDRP decisions. The change is also likely to require the complainant to order an additional reverse who is searched from a third-party vendor for each new registrant, incurring substantial costs to do so. Okay.
Noted.
Volker, go for it, man. Go for it.
That's my old one, sorry.
Volker, don't be a wuss. Come on, you know you can say something on this. Go on, you know you want to.
I was only half listening, so I first have to reread, sorry.
Okay, that's fine. We'll let you off the hook. Christine and then Alan.
Yeah, this is Christine. I would just like to say that I think maybe comments 82 and 83 stem from maybe an older understanding of the rules. I started here 8 years ago, and when I started, there was no sort of compliance team back in that day to enforce the UDRP. And so what ICANN staff did back at that time was when complainants would call them and complain about CyberFlight, they would say, well, the domain name really doesn't have to be prevented from transfer till after the respondent's notified by the provider after this commencement. Now, that's shifted and changed in the past 8 years, and ICANN is now enforcing the fact that, you know, it's the filing of the complaint, and as David has pointed out in the written comments in the chat. And so I think that perhaps some of these comments are written with an old understanding of how things work, because we are typically getting better support from ICANN with respect to the locking of the domain name before commencement, although I think there are some registrars, as we found out from the survey, who are, in fact, not locking until commencement. So I think this is one of the problems, or maybe the exact problem, that this entire working group is designed to address, and I think Inter brings up a good point that it's a problem, but we know it's a problem, that's why we're here.
Okay, thank you. Alan?
Yeah, as I blurted before you gave a chance to anyone to speak, noted, I think, is the right answer. I don't think they're saying anything new that we haven't already talked about and isn't already in our work plan.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and special category for Luke, congratulations, everybody. We have finished dealing with the public comments. And I have managed to offend Luke again, but that's okay. We are now finally able to move on to something slightly meatier, and I'm not too sure what the vegetarian equivalent of that is, so apologies. We are now moving on... tofu. Okay, so what'd you say, tofu-ier? I don't know. We're going to now have a look...
Well.
Excuse me?
hard tofu if it's going to be meatier.
Yeah, but maybe I should say chewier. I'm just not too sure if that really works. Kind of meatier seems to work for me semantically. Oh, don't say silky, David. Make me think about silky smooth. I was watching Don't Mess with the Zohan the other night as part of my stupid film weekend. We're now going to start looking at the straw man. And yes, Volker, that does involve lots of hummus. Okay, so the straw man. Now, Marika, I think this is your baby in some respects. So I'm going to hand this over to you.
Yes, thanks, Michele. So this is Marika. So basically, the straw man proposal basically derives, I think, from the discussions we've had today in a kind of an attempt to try to define the basic steps at the top level of how I think the working group sees at the moment how such a process should go. I think I should start out by saying as well, this is just something I've drafted up with some input from colleagues within ICANN. This is not an official proposal or ICANN position or any attempt in trying to determine what you need to say or decide. This is just a first step which I hope will help stimulate the discussions and hopefully will get us towards some concrete recommendations on how we would like to move forward on this. As I said before, this is a kind of high-level approach, so there's still a lot of details that will need to be worked out, and I think based on the discussions we've had today and as well on last week, I think already some items that are obvious that I think we need to change or at least address. But having said that, let me just try to take you through the proposed or the straw man proposal as it currently stands. So basically, the first step will be that the UDRP complaint is filed with the UDRP provided by the complainant. I think as we've discussed and as I sense there is some kind of agreement getting around the concept of maybe considering eliminating the existing requirement of having the complainant also notify the respondent at the same time of filing the complaint. So in if that would be the concept, basically the next step would be then for the UDRP provider to review the complaint for administrative compliance with the policy and the rules. This is currently also as it currently is in the UDRP rules. So then if it would be deemed compliant per step two, the UDRP provider forwards the complaint to the registrar and notifies the registrar of the commencement of the administrative proceedings within three calendar days following receipt of the fees to be paid by the complainant. Again, this is what is currently in the UDRP rules, but I think something that we need to distinguish here, and this is something we have discussed as well, I think, at the last meeting, the concept that currently exists, and I wasn't completely aware of when writing this, that there are actually two points of communication currently between the UDRP provider and the registrar, the first one being when I think they do a quick check to really make sure that it's not a bogus complaint, request verification from the registrar and also request a lock. And then following that, they do the complete administrative check and inform the registrar of commencement. I think we need to probably have a further discussion on how those two processes are timed, and also possibly whether, if there would be a requirement indeed to change it, or if the notification to the respondent would change, if this would maybe eliminate the need for, an initial request to lock the domain name prior to having completed the administrative proceedings. So I think this is one of the areas where we probably need to have some further discussion and determine exactly how that aligns. So basically, the next step would be immediately, and there again, it's a discussion we need to have. I put 24 hours here, but I think from the discussions, it's clear that we're probably it's more likely that we're looking at business day. So I think, again, that's an area that the working group will need to discuss further, whether it's one, two, three, or how many of our business days, and how to factor in holidays, weekends, and response times. So then again, upon receipt of the notification or verification request, as I said before, I think we need to determine there which of the two triggers the actual locking. And again, maybe there needs to be discussion as well if in the end that with any change in notification requirements, whether there will be only one communication from the UDRP provider or whether that still would remain two-step process. And again, we need to decide which of those would trigger actually the requirement to lock within a certain time frame. As I noted here, it's a note as well, I think as part of that, we use lock very freely, but I think as part of this exercise, it's really important as well that we actually define the term lock. What does it actually mean? And maybe we need to even move away from the term lock, but you know, provide a different kind of description that really makes clear what it actually means, and also clarify which changes are not allowed, but also which changes are allowed. I think in that context, we've discussed that, for example, changes to name servers should be allowed. I think that's one of the things where I think there was a kind of agreement. So that is one area we also need to further define. So then the next step would be once the registrar has taken measures to prevent any changes of registrar and registrant transfer of the domain name registration, the registrar confirms this with the UDRP provider and informs the registrant and forwards the complaint to the registrant. So again, this is the concept we've discussed before, to basically wait until the domain name is actually locked before the registrant or the respondent is informed. And I think this is something that also follows the proposed approach in the URS. As you see here in the notes as well, you know, been playing as well with this, because we've discussed as well what needs to happen in the case of the privacy proxy services, changes to who is. But you know, following discussions here internally, I think our view is that it's very difficult to address here as part of any kind of recommendations here, because if you would make a kind of recommendation that would say proxy privacy services have the rights to change information, that might be an option if you would have an accreditation program and you actually know who accredited proxy privacy service providers are. In the current environment, I think it's not possible to assess which are legitimate proxy and privacy service providers and which aren't. So I think the suggestion here is to follow existing practice, and I think that's what several of you have described, that is actually something that would be handled between the proxy privacy service and the UDRP panel. So that will be one recommendation there. I think something else to mention here, and that is also something I received internal feedback on, is that I know we discussed completely locking down who is and not allowing any kind of changes. But I think something we need to consider there is that something like that would completely contradict or would contradict the current WHOIS accuracy policy. So the suggestion there would be that indeed the registrant name might be locked, but any contact information probably would need to be allowed to be updated, as otherwise it would contradict another policy. Or again, that's something that would need to be further considered, because we do want to make sure that it doesn't. We don't create a policy that or a recommendation that directly contradicts other recommendations. And again, then saying here that one way around that, because I know what UDRP providers have said, that they can't go continuously monitor any changes in who is. For example, a recommendation or a requirement might be there that if there are any changes to contact information in who is, there is also a requirement to inform the UDRP provider to make sure that they have the latest contact information and they don't have a need to constantly go back and forth to WHOIS to actually see whether there have been any updates or changes.
Yeah, Marika, it's Alan. I think we want to be careful in the wording there. We may not want to say can change the contact information, but correct or something like that. There should be a tone there saying you're doing it to fix a problem, not just to change it arbitrarily.
Okay.
We can't necessarily enforce that, but the wording should be in that direction, I think.
Okay. Good point. I'll make that update. And then the next step will be that upon conclusion of the UDRP proceeding, the registrar must unlock the domain name as soon as possible following 10 business days. And here in the notes I've said as well that, as part of this, we'll probably need to provide further details in the final flow chart. As registrar actions are different depending on the outcome of the proceeding. So again, I think there might be an area where we can hopefully usefully clarify what are the required steps that a registrar needs to take depending on what happens. As I noted here, and I think that's something that has been pointed out before on the mailing list, there may need to be a further consideration of the current discrepancy that exists between the 10 and 15 waiting days depending on whether the complainant or respondent prevails. But again, I think these are also elements where we may need to consider whether that requires changes to the UDRP or whether that's the because those are specifically written in currently and it might require further changes. Then there's an additional requirement, and then again, that goes back to what we just discussed before, this kind of provision or recommendation in relation to what should happen when a settlement has been received. So basically says here, should both parties come to a settlement during the course of the proceeding, which would involve a transfer or cancellation, the registrar must remove any lock preventing a transfer or cancellation within 48 hours of notification by the UDP provider. And again, I've put hours here. I know we've spoken about business days before. So this is, again, just a suggestion, I think, based on the discussions we've had. And I think based on the discussion today, I think there's already some further detail that we can build in here to follow the current practices as well as the current requirements, I believe, under the UDRP. I think one other point I would like to make before opening up the floor for comments and suggestions is that the idea here is that, you know, hopefully we first can come to a stage where we broadly agree on the different steps and approaches to each of the steps in this process. And I think then the next step would be after that is to actually determine, okay, so how are we going to go about those? Are those best practices recommendations? Are those requirements? Are these just clarifications? And some of the feedback I've received as well, and that's something we may want to look at, is thinking for those areas where it's merely a clarification or interpretation of the UDRP or the UDRP rules, the working group could consider and recommending an advisory. And as I understand, I think an advisory is something that ICANN Compliance can enforce, and it would be a requirement. However, if there are any recommendations that differ from the actual language of the UDRP or the UDRP rules or mark significant changes or deletions or anything else, I think then the working group will need to consider further how to go about those, because that might require specific changes. And I think some have suggested, for example, this possible change in notification of the respondent might be under consideration, and that is a specific requirement currently under the UDRP rules, so that could be a very targeted change. But again, I think it might be recommended that the working group first looks at the overall process and come to some kind of agreement where there is common ground, and then as a next step determine how we can actually go about making sure that those recommendations are enforced or recommended as best practices, depending on the discussions of the working group. Michaela?
Okay. Thanks, Marika. Two things. First off, with respect to the lock thing, as I put on the chat, my humble suggestion is the term freeze. I'm not sure if anybody else has issues with that or other suggestions, but I'll throw that out there as a suggestion. The other thing is one of the issues that we've run into is that complainants seem to assume that registrars have magical capabilities to move domain names to other registrars as if by magic. I'm going to wave up my magic wand and domains on my accreditation are suddenly going to magically appear on Volcker's accreditation. So I think, you know, some kind of thing, some kind of explanation or process as to how the possibilities for how registrars can enact a decision, like what we are capable of doing, wouldn't be such a bad idea. I know there's different ways of doing it, but there's no way that I can magically make domains magically appear in Key Systems accreditation or GoDaddy's accreditation. Christine, go ahead.
I just wanted to point out, I think, Marika, you mentioned this early on when you started presenting the straw man proposal, but really, I think in the chat, I think what we've really proposed and what we've been talking about is that the lock happens between steps one and two. So at step one, when the complaint is filed, that's where the quick look compliance check is done. I mean, by quick look, it takes 5 minutes or less, and then we request a lock at that point, and that's really where the lock happens. And then once we get the lock is when we can do the compliance check, because that's when we take that WHOIS information, which has now hopefully been, you know, ascertained at that point, and compare it to the complaint. By that point, we know who the respondents are. We have gotten information from the registrar as far as, you know, when the domain name is about to expire. We know if there's any other problems with the domain name. So after we've gotten the information back from the registrar and the locking process, that's when we're able to do the compliance check. So I just wanted to point that out as far as, you know, sort of the order of events.
Okay, thank you, Christine. I'll take one last person, and then we're going to close it off because we've got about 3 minutes left. Matt is asking about processes around the GNSO. Matt, I think you... Okay. You've got several questions about how do PDPs are voted on, proposals and everything else. It's quite a complex system. It might not be a bad idea for you to actually raise this with Marika directly. She'd be probably the best person to explain this to you. Marika, and then Alan.
Yeah, this is Marika, and I think just to know that, you know, I think as the idea is that the GNSO Council is the manager of the process. So in the ideal world, what they would do if recommendations come from a PDP working group that are consensus recommendations, ideally they would just rubber stamp them, because basically it's a consensus of the working group. Working group is as well, you know, there are several steps in there where there's opportunities for public comment, for input from the different stakeholder groups and constituencies. So that ideally would be the process. So it's their consensus recommendations that the council rubber stamps. But I have to say there as well that that doesn't always happen, although I think lately they've been really good about it. And as far as I recall, I think most of the recommendations that have come lately to the council have basically been those that are consensus recommendations have been adopted as is by the GNSO Council. But there is no requirement to do so. So there is the possibility, and I think what we've been recommending as in the current PDP, that if there are concerns by the Council, or if they feel that recommendations should be changed, instead of changing them themselves, they should send them back to the working group. Because it's the working group that has developed those recommendations, and they should be tasked with addressing any concerns that may be raised at the council level. So I think that's the short answer.
Okay, thank you, Marika. Alan, you have the final word, and please make
it
brief.
I'll add a little bit to the short answer. What Marika says is generally true. The council could change things. They haven't in general. They have, however, on a semi-regular basis, broken recommendations apart and implemented some but not necessarily others. And certainly one other, and perhaps more than one other, PDP have included in their recommendations the fact that they should be treated or must be treated as a unit, and cannot be, the council cannot pick and choose which ones to implement. And if we feel that's important, we could do that as well. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Alan. That's it, folks. Speak to you all next week. With regard to the straw man proposal, it would be helpful, people, to have a look at it. If you have thoughts on it, if you think there are some things that are good, some things that are bad, there's this wonderful thing called email, and we have mailing lists. Please use them. Speak to you all next week. Thank you.
Thanks, Michele. Good meeting.
Thanks, Alan.
Thank you indeed.
Bye.
Good evening, morning, and whatever time you have.